It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
This episode of Sewing Out Loud is brought to you by Copper Compression. If you've been doing extra sewing or housework, your hands might need some extra support. Visit coppercompression.com and use code SEWINGOUTLOUD to receive 30% off your first order.
Welcome to Sewing Out Loud, the official podcast of ZD Sewing Studio. Here are your hosts, ZD and Mallory.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Mallory Donahue.
And I'm ZD Donahue.
And we are going to talk about muslins today. We spoke about muslins on an episode from, I think, 2018 or 2017, which is so long ago.
How many episodes are we on? Do you have any idea?
It's at least 52 a year for 4 years. So we're on like 200 something, you know, because we've published every week.
Yes, we have.
January of 2016.
Yes.
So, and we all have only done one rebroadcast. Did you know that?
Right, and that was not because we didn't have an episode. It was because of technical difficulties.
It was some kind of weird technical thing.
We couldn't upload it. It was our...
But also, it was because I just had a baby, so we like had an excuse. And when I say just had a baby, I mean like just had a baby. So
even though we had the episode like ready...
There was some sort of technical problem
about uploading it to the service.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, we're very proud of that. But we defined what a muslin was in relation to a sloper and a moulage.
Well, we defined the difference.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's what I mean when I say in relation to. So we did like a little vocab thing, but I don't think we've ever really talked about like our personal process of making muslins or like recommendations about that. Just a dedicated episode. So here we go. Well, we got a question in the group that kind of sparked this for me because someone said, well, what do you do to make a muslin for your knit garments?
Right.
Okay. So this just, we'll get back to that in particular, but this brings us to just the fundamental, you know, thing about muslins is that if we define a muslin as a test garment, okay, some people also use the word toile and then autocorrect corrects it to toilet, which is funny.
So spell toile for them.
T-O-I-L-E. Mm-hmm. So these words refer to historically inexpensive fabrics.
Well, and muslin was the inexpensive woven fabric.
Yes.
The most original inexpensive woven fabric.
Yes.
And, you know, it wasn't over, it wasn't bleached.
Yeah.
You know, it had... faults in and things. It wasn't like the perfect smooth.
Minimal processing, right. Which is why it was
good
cheap.
Word. Okay. Good word. Yeah.
So it's a cheap fabric.
Right.
And before, you know, the advent of, you know, widespread knit fabrics, most clothes were all made out of wovens, okay? Unless they were hand knitted. Okay.
Right.
So first of all, these terms come from that time when muslin was used to make a test garment. So
right.
They call it
a muslin.
Okay. Before you cut into your linen, your silk, your whatever.
Right. Your expensive fabric.
Most fabrics compared to today had a very similar hand. They were non-stretchy.
Right.
Of course, some fabrics were thicker and you had things like brocades and velvets and silks and satins that were, you know, of a different
hand. Out of the muslin, you certainly got the shape of the garment.
Yeah.
Or where the pleat was going to, you know, lay, or the dart was going to lay.
Yes.
Again, as we have always said, every time you change your fabric, you're actually changing the garment.
So in order to make an accurate test garment of whatever you're doing, no matter what it is, okay, trousers, swimsuit, I don't care what it is, okay, the fabric you use for your test garment must be similar to the fabric you use for your final garment.
Similar in weight, similar in weave, similar in hand.
Everything.
Right.
Okay, got to be real
color
close.
Doesn't have to be the same.
Okay, yeah, the one thing.
Right.
Okay, so why this happens, I just want to bring this up, is it could be that you make it out of the same fabric if you're okay with the cost.
Right.
Okay, so you made my mother-in-law's wedding dress.
Yes.
Okay, and actually, I think maybe you did use some muslin.
I did use muslin
for
her dress.
You used actual muslin to make a muslin.
Well, because I was making everything sort of at once.
Right.
I was making her sloper and the pattern and the muslin.
Everything.
Like at one time.
Right. So her fabric, really the final fabric we used for her dress was like not very expensive. It was this polyester crepe. Mm-hmm. I think it was $4 to $7 a yard.
Right.
And we could have ordered enough of that.
We could have ordered enough. You're right.
To make a test mm-hmm. garment. So if you find your perfect fabric and you say, okay, this is what I'm going to use.
Right.
Then you can use that as your muslin. There's
and,
nothing
and
against
sometimes
that.
You'll hear someone or see someone or, you know, they'll say, ooh, this is a wearable muslin, which means they started out with something they thought was going to just be their test garment that maybe they were never going to wear again. But it turned out so well and
out.
So nice that, yes, they can wear it. They are happy to wear it publicly.
So that's actually kind of a reason to, when you shop the discount areas, if you find a woven that's really inexpensive, but say you actually don't like the color of it, like we do. We've got some weird colored stuff over here mm-hmm. that is sort of in our test garment pile.
Well, and it's like really with knits, too.
Yes.
You know, by something that's real strange, or it says some...
Oh, yeah, you got that in the leggings class?
Some fabrics have, like, the date on them.
Yeah.
It'll say, like, 1998 or something, like, you know,
now,
or...
the leggings class, you show... I forgot about this until just now, but you show a, like, hot pink fabric with, like, the American flag on it, too. It's, like, really strange, but you're like... Look.
Actually, someone gifted that to me. Be careful.
Well, it's unique, okay?
Yes.
And it may not be something that you and I would personally
right.
wear. However, it's really good for muslins.
Or undergarments.
Yes, okay?
Yeah.
So when you see the sale aisle and you, you know, you've got the funds
right.
and your sewing budget or whatever, that's actually a really good reason to buy something on sale. Or even if you find, so that's knit, okay?
Or something that you might refer to as ugly fabric. And that's when it's funny that it happens to somebody. They're like, I had this ugly fabric
uh-huh.
and I made my muslin. And look how neat
and
it turned
like
out.
It.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
You
so,
like it when,
yeah.
you made it to, yeah. when it's made
yeah.
into something? Yeah. I've had that happen before. So that's a reason to buy some fabric on sale. Now, you can buy a bolt of muslin, too.
Right.
But nowadays, most of the clothes we want to end up wearing actually don't share a lot of characteristics with a bolt of muslin fabric.
That's correct.
We make our jeans out of stretch denim. We make our shirts out of knits. Or, let's say, like a rayon challis.
Right.
Okay, that has happened a lot in the EZT. People say, oh, look, I made this out of quilting cotton, or I made it out of a muslin, you know,
right.
an unbleached muslin.
A woven,
and they're
a tight woven.
And they're a little unhappy with the drape. And I was like, you know.
Because there is no drape.
Because there is no drape.
Right.
And I say, well, the nature of this top is that it's not very fitted. So a
right.
lot of the, you know, fit or the look of the top is going to come from the drape.
So sometimes you get that upholstered look because it's too stiff.
Yeah, you look real boxy.
Right.
And boxy, actually, Heather from now Closet Core Patterns, not Closet Case anymore, they changed their name, she just posted like a little video of her capsule wardrobe. And man, you know, she's got the boxy top look down. You know, it is what she's wearing. And I thought, I don't think I like that on
boxy
me.
Boxy was very much in... like in the 70s and
uh-huh.
80s. Well, and then you had the big shoulder pads and things. Here's the thing. You know, something can be in, okay, or be trending or whatever, and it doesn't mean you always look good in it either.
Right.
And, you know, boxy tops, I've seen people in boxy tops when they weren't on trend, and they look amazing
yeah,
in them.
Yeah, she looks real
right.
nice in some of the, like, in that silhouette. So anyway, she's enjoying that. But I just wanted to say that it'll, if you like the boxy look, okay. And if you don't, okay, you got to use a different fabric.
Right.
It'll change the results. So that's why you buy fabrics on sale sometimes, even if they aren't quite your cup of tea, because they can be helpful in making your muslin. And we have
some orange,
yeah,
camouflage knit.
Yes.
It has spandex in it.
It's not something that ZD and I would wear normally, but it can be helpful.
Haven't had to yet, anyway.
Yes. Now, sometimes you can feel comfortable enough in your knowledge of a pattern or your knowledge of sewing and your knowledge of your body that you don't feel the need to make a muslin.
Right.
This can happen, okay? And actually, when you get the right guidance, a lot of the times, you don't necessarily need to make a muslin. So it is not, we're really encouraging it a lot of the time.
And the other thing is if you have a sloper, which is a basic shape of your body,
yeah,
and you have a pattern and, you know, you can see how close are they, do they mimic each other, you know, sometimes you have the knowledge or you have the nerve because the fabric's not real expensive. Now, oftentimes when I have made a muslin, it's been a wedding dress.
Yes.
Because you don't want to go wrong. Okay. And the other thing is it allows the person to try on the shape of the garment to see if they like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I've had that happen. Oh, well, is this going to be like this? And I'm like, well, this is what you wanted originally. Uh-huh. Do you want something different? Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing I've done with a muslin is make the muslin up and had to mail it to someone.
Yeah.
They have tried it on. We have taken a video of someone who, you know, are basically do a face, not a Facebook, like a
FaceTime.
FaceTime, where, you know, I'm saying to the person, and this is why sometimes I like the muslin to be a muslin.
Right.
I'm saying, okay, put an X where her nipples are.
Right.
You know, put a this where her this is. Or, you know, mark on there where the top of her knee is.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing that's kind of nice about a muslin.
Yeah.
It can be, like, used, you know, it can be marked on. And then, you know, they would send that back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would make alterations to that.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break and let's come back and talk about what you do with that muslin while you're working with it.
Let's take a moment to thank our latest sponsor, Copper Compression, for supporting the podcast.
Copper Compression offers a full range of copper-infused wellness products like braces, gloves, and sleeves that provide targeted relief and the support you need through your active recovery. They have the highest copper content on the market, guaranteed.
Copper-infused fabric is wondrous material. It has antimicrobial and anti-odor properties and boosts circulation. The unique combination of compression and copper gives you the strength to heal.
We know how important our hands are. I've been knitting and gardening more while staying at home, which is fun, but my hands were killing me. I started using their half-finger gloves while working on my latest project, and my hands have felt so much better.
Copper Compression was recently in the news. They donated their entire stock of 18,000 professionally manufactured masks to New York and New Jersey hospitals.
And of course, we have a special offer for our listeners. Go to coppercompression.com/sewingoutloud30, that's coppercompression.com/sewingoutloud30, or use the promo code sewingoutloud, all one word, at checkout for a very generous 30% off on your first order. Thanks, Copper Compression.
Sewing out loud.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
First time you did something for the first time.
It's time for
for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
And we're back. All right. So let's, you know, with your, I want to bring up the ginger jeans real quick. And I think I've brought this up before, but I did a class where there were like 10, 12, I think I've taught like 15 people in person how to use the, how to make the ginger jeans. And that pattern's really cool because it includes finished measurements. And no one had to make a muslin. We were able to define which sizes they needed and then go forward, and we did alter it. Okay, so this is blurring the line between a muslin and a right. final garment.
It's like their first garment actually is their muslin.
Yes,
now.
Okay. So, you know, the for the sake of this episode, you know, I just wanted to bring that up is when you get close enough to the size, it doesn't mean you won't have to alter the pattern, but it still can be a final garment because we did that really awesome step of basting the garment together mm-hmm. to where it could be put on and markings could be made. So we basted so that it could be taken apart and put back together because we were using it final fabric. With your muslin, you sew that muslin together. You leave the same seam allowance as you normally would. You know, is there anything special you do when you sew up a muslin?
I mean, I do baste it.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I certainly don't use a 2.5.
You use a longer stitch.
Yeah, I use a longer stitch. Trying to think that, you know, I have had people do things like put the darts on the outside.
Yeah.
I don't prefer that method because the darts are some bulk that are going to be in the garment. I construct the garment as it would be. Now, if there might be an instance where I'm not going to put a collar on, so I will cut away the seam allowance so that I know where that's going to lay, something like that. So maybe I won't have a seam allowance anymore around my neckline. Does that make sense?
Yeah. ZD and I are really not fans of sewing garments inside out and like putting them on like that. Okay.
You know,
or putting them on.
Yeah.
I just
did that bridal fitting and she said to me, do I put this on inside out? And I thought,
man, that's gotten into the civilian population.
It's really weird because there's a built-in corset underneath.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, so the corset would be on the outside.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, it's just, I don't think it's a realistic thing to do.
Yeah, but that's
the other thing, and you know, I didn't say anything to her, right? But she has one hip higher than the other.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if she knows it or not, but I'm altering it that way.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a lot. You know, it was like, she probably doesn't know it.
But it's a thing.
It was enough. It was like, you know, well, we want her gown to look nice.
Well,
you know,
right. And if you've done it inside out, it'd be the other hip, you know,
right.
It'd be mirror image. So we're not a big fan of that. Also, with the muslin, okay, 5/8 inch seam allowance. Let's talk about that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a pair of trousers that have a back seam and two side seams and a front seam, that's four places where two 5/8 inch seam allowances come together,
right.
Which is a total of 1 3/4 times 4, so that's 7 inches. That's a total of 7 inches mm-hmm. that could be added to that garment. And if you are 7 inches off when choosing a size, you got to start over anyway, okay? So sometimes people are like, cut it with a larger seam allowance. I'm like, how much bigger are we going to get here, you know? So they cut it with this bigger seam allowance, and then they try it on inside out, and I'm like, we're just all at a weird point. So if you have chosen, and then we talk about a princess seam. Okay, so that's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Depends on how many princess seams
well,
you're doing.
Right, there could be
I just think
around the body, if you've got 6 panels, then you
You'll actually usually have 7 because you have a back
center back seam, you're right.
Usually.
Yeah, okay. Well, that
well,
makes my calculation
it doesn't have to
a
have a
harder.
Center back seam, but more than likely it will.
Yes, no, I know what you're
saying. If the head hole's big enough to get your head through, you can do a side set zipper.
No, you're totally
so,
right.
So, but the other thing is if you're doing a princess seam, I don't know why you wouldn't do a back seam because that gives you shape also.
Right.
So I don't know why you would negate the shape by not having the center back seam. That's my spiel on princess seams.
So what is 7? So I could do 1 3/4 times 4, but I can't do 7 That's 12.25 inches extra. And I'm talking, okay, so even if your body circumference, you know, I know there's differences between, you know, 12.25 is a certain percentage of a 32-inch waist and it's a certain percentage of like a 50-inch waist. But still, even at that larger, you know, waist size, that's like a lot. You have miscalculated if you need to let out the garment 12 inches, okay? You know? So I'm just saying that there really shouldn't be a need to change the seam allowance if it's at 5/8. I think it's an extra step you don't need. Now, is there a need to look at your pattern and blend between sizes? Quite possibly. That's what we did in Ginger Jeans land. Okay, you're this at the waist, you're this at the hips. All right, that's a different story. We're going off body measurements. But yeah, sew that garment like you would normally sew it to make your muslin. Maybe you do basting stitch. Okay, so your default straight stitch is generally at a 2.5
You might not
length.
Put something like a zipper placket in.
Okay, there you go.
You might just have a seam there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then you have to decide how to do that seam.
Yeah.
Like, are you just going to baste a zipper in there? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you can pin it.
Yeah, we...
I've been known not to put the zipper... Now, sometimes I do put the zipper in.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but I've been known not to put the zipper in. I have my seam allowance marked, and I just pin along there.
Okay, I wanted to bring that up.
Right.
Marking that seam allowance.
Right.
Okay, so if you don't, let's look at the back seam of a shift dress or a sheath dress, excuse me, and you've got that seam allowance marked so you can pin it up.
Right.
Same with the ginger jeans. It's a little funny because you don't sew the fly in.
Right.
And so you have this funny thing in the front, and you got to just overlap.
You'll have a flap,
and make your center fronts meet, you know.
Right.
So, but it is, it's always a little funny, and I'm like, if that looks a little weird, just don't worry about it right now.
Another thing that you need to consider with any type of muslin is, especially if it's like a jacket or a shirt or a dress, any sort of top with a sleeve, are your sleeves going to be, you know, are you symmetrical in your sleeves? Like, are your shoulders the same? Because a lot of times I just do one sleeve.
Ah, okay. Okay, so like, if someone does have a big disparity, make sure to do both.
Right, then you would make sure to do both.
If you think that you're pretty symmetrical, you could be okay on one sleeve on a jacket or something.
Right.
Now, this doesn't apply to trousers. You have to do both legs, the trousers.
Right. Although I have had people actually... take two-size trousers when they've had someone who has, you know, some sort of bizarre adjustment that's over like an inch or a half inch. Or, you know, like I knew someone that used to sew for their stepfather, and he had had polio. So he had a leg that was absolutely like his hip, his leg and everything were a different size on one side. And you'd think, oh, well, make him the same and just like, you know, make that look kind of beefed up on the
side.
But he wanted it to fit.
Yeah.
It fit better. And fit him better. So she did not know how to draft, and she started out with two different size patterns, and it worked.
Well, what I what I meant was I have seen some people try.
And she had to adjust, you know, on both of them to make like the center seam work.
Yeah, I have seen some people be like, "I'm only going to make one leg and hold it up to myself," and I'm like, "Yeah, I wouldn't do that."
It just doesn't work because you need to know what kind of ease you have across your back and across your belly, you know,
everything like that.
Right.
Okay, this is something. Now I want to shift to that Facebook question about knits a little bit. I can't remember if the person said the garment they were making or something like that. But if I'm going to muslin out a t-shirt, or I'm trying to think of things. I've made muslins for swimsuits actually more than for other knit garments for myself, because I just personally, it's like closer fitting, and I wanted to know I was getting the fit I wanted. And okay, I don't know if this is the right way to do it, but I just like make it, you know.
Right.
I use the serger, okay, because with a knit, it is so much more forgiving that I should really be able to, you know, kind of get pretty close, okay? And that test garment is different from a woven test garment. I will construct it on the serger. You can't baste it together with a straight stitch. That's not going to work.
You can baste it with a zigzag.
You could baste it with a zigzag for sure. But the way I feel about it is I'm just going to make this. And if it doesn't work out, I'll cut it up into little things for my kid, or I'll cut it into the neck bindings if it's like really off.
Well, the other thing I think about a swimming suit is the fact that, you know, you're obviously using something that's probably spandex.
Yeah.
Is there is more leeway. Mm-hmm. That's why when you sometimes buy a knit garment, it'll say a size 14, 16, or a size large,
this
medium, small.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, there is room for stretch and ease and error, or whatever you want to call it, allowance.
And I feel like I need to construct, like, the whole garment to get an idea of how it's going to work on me when I'm moving sometimes. So I just got to do the whole thing, you know.
Well, and you know, my green jungly swimming suit? That's a muslin.
That was a muslin. So you got to – so that's why – so I'm saying sometimes I don't feel the need to make a muslin. And then sometimes I want to make up the whole garment and see if it works in its entirety.
And I wanted to know how the zipper was going to work. All these things I wanted to know how they were going to work. And it just so happened it worked.
Okay. And sometimes it doesn't. Okay.
Right.
And then I have a garment. I mean, I hate to say this, but like sometimes I've made myself a knit muslin and it just gets then shredded up into other things. You know, it just does not.
What's that half a pair of pants laying over there?
I don't know.
There's a one leg of a pant over there. Is there another one someplace?
I don't know what you're talking about.
See that black and...
Oh, that's you. I don't know. Was that
it's
yours?
Not me.
No, okay. I don't know. Maybe it's going to get shredded up into something else.
I'm like, here's a pant leg. Okay.
We'll find out. Okay, so that does happen sometimes with my knits. But let's talk a little bit. When you have a muslin, you will make markings on it, hopefully. That's like what you're supposed to be doing.
I mean, that's part of, like, the whole idea is you can use it sort of like a chalkboard.
Yeah.
You know, like, and when you say markings, generally I'm doing them with a pencil or a pen or a Sharpie, you know, like an ink pen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing it with something that is permanent.
Or you are safety pinning.
Safety pinning. Lots of safety pinning.
Love safety pins.
And I'm sure we've mentioned this before. I will mention it again. We mark alterations with safety pins and not straight pins because they stay.
Right.
Okay. And also, when you're removing the garment, when the person is, you know, taking it off, they don't fall out and they don't stick.
They don't stick the person.
Way to do it. Right.
That's the way to do it.
Now, here's one thing about that because, you know, this happened to me. I pulled out my pins the other day. And so many of them were dull. Please remember.
Oh, my
like,
gosh.
Just
yeah.
throw it away.
Throw away.
Just throw it away.
Get rid of them.
Yep.
Yeah, because they will be a problem.
Sometimes when they get old, they just get dull, too, because they're, you know, I don't know.
Well, they've been through
corroded or whatever.
Right. Yeah, whatever. So you can then make alterations to your muslin and try it on again.
Right.
You know, and that can get you... you know, what you need. And then you make those alterations to the pattern.
Well, I was going to say, this is something where you've got to decide what you're going to do with transferring your markings. Are you going to trace your pattern and transfer new markings onto the traced, you know, are you going to do them onto the original pattern? It's nice to have both, I believe.
Yeah.
That way, if I do go to altering the pattern, I do know what I have done to change it.
Yeah. So in Ginger, you know, in Ginger Jean's class, we'd often be taking up that back seam a little bit. And so we would pin it. We would mark it on our pattern. We would cut it off the garment, and we would continue to make the garment.
And with what Mallory just said, we cut it off. So before you start cutting, you need to make sure you have marked those alterations onto the paper pattern someplace. Because if you cut and then sew, and then you're like, well, wait, what? Where was the original seam line? Where was the original cut? So you need to take that into account before you cut away. Be careful when you cut away.
Yeah.
You know, I have seen people get anxious and cut away right away.
Yeah.
Or cut away maybe before they try it on. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't want to cut away before you try it on.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's a little too tight, or maybe it's not how you want it, or maybe you didn't take it in exactly right. So don't cut away. My practice is, especially if it's on myself, is not to cut away until I try that on again.
So based that alteration in,
right.
Try it on one more time.
Now, if it's something where you're taking the seam in 2 inches, you may have to cut it just to be able to visualize your fit.
Well, right.
But if I don't have to, I will do that same thing when I'm altering clothes for people.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm taking a back seam of a pair of pants or something, I will try not to cut away the alteration or the allowance. I will try to leave it there. If it is not a problem with bulk, I will leave it there.
Well, and that's okay. So we're always leaving seam allowance.
Right.
No matter what. So when we say cut away, we mean cut 5/8 of an inch away from your seam
right.
line.
You we're know. Saying when if you take it in, then you have an extra seam yeah. allowance there. If I'm altering a pair of pants and I don't have to cut that away, or the side of a dress, say, uh-huh. and I do not have to cut it away, I don't.
Leave it if you can. Yeah.
Yes, because especially if you haven't fitted
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, this might not apply for when you are, you know, doing like a serged seam or something
right.
like that. But once again, you can baste that in with a zigzag if you want to. Okay. So, yeah, always make sure to keep that at least the seam allowance and leave it if you can. You see this on men's trousers. There's a big seam allowance left there.
They're made to be
altered.
They're made
to be altered.
So what they do is they put on the waistband without the back seam being sewn.
Uh-huh.
And then they sew up the entire back seam and through the waistband. That is because they expect an alteration.
That's right. And sometimes, like, that's just sewn up with a chain stitch and you're supposed right. to re-sew it. Depending on the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. I've had people be like, my crotch seam split. And I was like, oh, this was supposed to be re-sewn before. So it's almost like they're selling you a muslin, like, you know.
Yeah, and those pockets that are sewn shut, you're supposed to
open those.
Open those, yeah.
And open the vents on
yes,
your jackets
yes.
and everything. So anyway, yeah, that's – so muslins are – it's a very amorphous term nowadays. But if you really are – let's pretend you got some – like I said, I don't often feel the need to make them for my knit garments because I feel like I can kind of nail it. Made a few for swimsuits. But if you do have that knit garment that's just or that knit fabric that's extremely precious, I would say that's when I would make a muslin these days.
I think a good muslin sometimes for like underpants or swimsuit bottoms is an old t-shirt.
Well,
you know, if I just want to get the shape, I'm talking about the shape and where it's going to come. That now it can't be worn out, you know. There, but that's I've used that over and over again.
Yeah, I just sometimes I don't think the t-shirt fabric has enough stretch.
Well, it depends on the t-shirt.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying take a t-shirt that doesn't stretch at all, like
right.
Your fabric.
I guess when I think about an old t-shirt, that's not. But
oh,
then,
you're thinking of like a logoed t-shirt.
Yes.
No,
yes.
That's not exactly what I meant.
Although
I've seen underpants made out of old
yes,
t-shirts.
But be careful, because a lot of people. Okay, on that post, she said, "What do you use for a muslin for your knit?" And people are like, "Oh, old, you know, jersey sheets."
Yeah.
And no, you can't go with that simplistic of an answer.
Well, and all jersey sheets are different.
That's right. And the knit garments you want to make are different.
Mm-hmm.
So no, you can't. You can't make that, you know, broad generalization. But that is where we got a bunch of that swim lining on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And we have used that. It's like very valid fabric for swim lining.
Right.
But also, it was enough of it. It was
because
enough
it wasn't
volume.
It wasn't really lining on sale. It was fabric. It just happens to be the color that we wanted for
right.
lining.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the purple. It was labeled a swim lining.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that purple
stuff.
Oh,
really? I use that for the outside.
No, me too.
The time.
I know. But
I didn't know that was lining.
It was sold as
I thought you were talking lining. About, we have also like a taupey lining, and then we have kind of a rusty brown lining that we use. Those are kind of my favorite. Those work for some reason, those seem to work well on everybody's skin tone and under almost every color.
Yeah, it just increases the opacity.
Right. The taupey one I just love.
No, we have that that bright purple.
Yeah.
And I think we ordered like 10 yards of it because it was so inexpensive, and it ends up being some stretchy fabric muslins for us
right.
a lot of the time. So that's very nice. But yeah, that is you know, that's a little bit of an insight into our muslin processes. So if you are starting to get into a certain type of fabric, like you've noticed, oh, there's all these shirts made from Ranchely, or there's all these, you know, things that I love that are made out of interlock knit or something like that, and you are somebody who really wants to check fit, then you do need to look for that type of fabric on sale so that you can get some, because the fabric characteristics really do need to be made, need to be the same on your muslin. And, you know, I wonder if I don't know if I have that as a, we have that as a whole module in the leggings class of how to choose fabric. Yes. And, like, in the easy tee, I just say, hey, choose a drapey woven. But then people are like, oh, well, I wanted to test it, so I used
well, this, and if you know. You're making a sloper and, you know, yeah. And then you make a muslin out of your sloper, right? Usually you're, you know, pick the, if you can pick the exact fabric, you're in good shape. Because most of the time when I make something that's made to measure like that and I make the test garment, it pretty much fits.
Well, yeah, especially yeah. if you have a well-fitting sloper right. or something like that. But, you know, just in the case of that wedding dress that we actually made out of really cheap fabric, it would have been real easy to make that out of the exact fabric, you know, since it was so inexpensive.
Right. The crepe.
So there's no rule that says it has to be unbleached muslin, okay? I just want to get that across to everybody. Maybe that's, like, the main point of the podcast.
I had a bolt of fabric from J.C. Penney because they used to sell fabric, okay?
Yeah.
And it was marked down to 24 cents a yard because fabric then cost 39 cents a yard.
Whoa.
It was marked down, and it was kind of a muslin color
mm-hmm.
and had big turquoise polka dots on it. And that was my muslin for a long time.
Yeah. So it was just like
right.
your discount.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was
yeah, don't let anybody tell you, oh, you're about to make a silk wedding dress. Well, you must use muslin. You might actually be better off with some kind of polyester silk imitator.
Some sort of drape that's
similar. If it has
similar.
A similar
right.
drape. I don't know. You know, right. you may find, or, you know, you find that, the polyester works for the actual garment, and so you just end up buying a bunch of that. Because, yeah, her dress, it did not look like it was made out of $7 a yard fabric. It really was quite impressive that, you know, sometimes the polys, are they have a good drape, and they're very durable, you know.
Most wedding dresses nowadays, commercial
yeah.
wedding dresses, are made out of polyester.
Right, right. Okay, well, we hope that that helps you a little bit on your muslin journey. Every muslin journey is going to be unique, okay?
Well, I was going to say, and you'll develop your own process.
Yeah, because yeah, ours you're, is going to be different than yours.
Right, and it's taught differently in different places,
mm-hmm.
okay? You know, you could, that used to be that, you know, everybody was very snobbish about how to teach these things, you know.
Maybe. Yeah.
And I think things have loosened up because technology is different. Fabrics are different. Lots of things have changed. So your process might be a little bit different than, you know, somebody else who makes a muslin just as well as you do.
Right, right. And yeah, it is just, it's going to depend on what you're doing. So if your process looks different, it doesn't mean it's necessarily wrong, and it might be different for every project you do. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for listening. You can find us on Instagram at SewHereCom. And ZD, take it away.
So long and so happy.
Thanks for listening to Sewing Out Loud. For even more expert sewing advice, visit SewHere.com.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.